Welcome to the International Bar Association's podcast. I'm Melissa Stock, and the topic for today's discussion is the use of facial recognition technology. Fraser Sampson, who was the UK's first biometric and surveillance camera commissioner between 2021 and 2023, joins me today. He also has 40 years of experience working in the criminal justice system, including as a solicitor, and is Professor of Governance and National Security at the Centre for Excellence in Terrorism, Resilience, Intelligence, and Organised Crime Research at Sheffield Hallam University. He has just joined the company FaceWatch as a non-executive director. Fraser, there has so far only been one significant challenge to the use of facial recognition technology in the UK. The case of Bridges reached the Court of Appeal, and this was looking at live facial recognition, that is, cameras picking out people in real time. And the Court of Appeal decided on the facts of that case that the use of live facial recognition by the police was unlawful because on those facts, there hadn't been a proper evaluation of bias in the system, but it did not conclude that the concept of the use of live facial recognition technology was unlawful so long as proper safeguards are in place. Now, that decision was 3 years ago. Where are we now in legal terms on the use of live facial recognition technology?
I think in legal terms, we probably haven't moved a great deal further, although we are about to, for reasons that I'll set out shortly. But in terms of the issues that were in scope in the Bridges case, the police have certainly addressed those issues, which were both, as you say, sort of algorithmic bias assurances and also adherence to and discharge of the public sector equality duty that the chief constable had to follow. I think that the police have learned a great deal from that and have adapted their policies and practices accordingly. But in addition, the single legal instrument that directly deals with the use of live facial recognition by the police is the government's Surveillance Camera Code, published under the Protection of Freedoms Act. And that code was amended in light of the Bridges case and contains a specific paragraph which directs chief officers to what they should be taking into account when they use live facial recognition. So I think the position is that on the facts of that case, as you say, there were some shortcomings. They've been addressed both by the police and now by the government's own surveillance camera code of practice. And therefore, it is pretty safe to conclude that provided the police follow those rules, then they can use live facial recognition and indeed have continued to do so in some areas. The reason why this will change shortly is that the government's policy position on all facial recognition is that it's covered by GDPR sufficiently, and therefore you don't need a surveillance camera code governing the use of public space surveillance by the police and local authorities, as we currently have, and therefore you don't need a surveillance camera commissioner, which is one of the roles that I fulfilled. That will all be repealed in the Data Protection and Digital Information Bill, which is on its way through Parliament now.
Are we saying then that what will be expected is that the police or public sector organisations will have to take into account their public sector equality duty within the DPIA? Is that sort of what the government is suggesting will happen, or the ICO suggesting?
I think what the government is suggesting is that there are already clear legal frameworks in place, one of which is the data protection framework, and another is the public sector equality duty, and you would take account of those in the same way that you would in any deployment of other operational technology. Therefore, there is nothing unusual or unique about using cameras in a way that process facial images and conduct facial matching. And of course, there's different ways for using facial recognition or facial matching. A lot of it that's being done by the police at the moment is retrospective. So it is simply getting the computer to go through formally captured images and to look for suspects that are also fed into the system. So nobody is out on the street, nobody is pointing cameras at people. It is simply poring over tens of thousands of hours of pre-recorded footage in order to match individuals with images in a way that before that software we weren't able to do, because it needed humans to do it, and no one was going to live long enough to go through some of that stuff. So yes, I think the government's position is that it's all covered, and some of us take a slightly different view on that and say that yes, there is a very significant amount of the legislation governing data processing that applies immediately to the use of facial recognition technology. But there are also other issues, such as when you're using it in public space, the so-called chilling effect, whereby people decide that they won't travel to a protest, they won't use their car in order to get to a particular event for fear of the police monitoring them and collecting their details of their number plate and occupants of the vehicle. They may not stand on a picket line, for example, or visit a certain place of public worship because they fear that people are within the state and policing, recording and retaining information about them. And those are not matters that are purely confined to or addressed by data protection legislation, and yet they are very real in the discussions about the police use of facial recognition technology.
Now, you've outlined what applies to the police. And as you say, the position is now that those rules that apply to the police will be almost the same as the private sector to some extent, because they will come under the remit of the ICO and the data protection legislation. Now, there are clearly different considerations if you are a public sector body compared with private organizations. Just looking at the private sector for a moment, what should companies be doing to ensure that how they are either developing or using this technology is compliant, or at least could be resilient to any concerns that may be raised?
Now, I think it's helpful to almost go back to the point about the police and bridges to say, okay, what would we do ordinarily in relation to any other extant duty or framework that we have in place? And then overlay on top of that any specific or additional considerations that come from the use or proposed use of this particular technology. So what you must have at the outset is a clear understanding of the purpose. So why you are considering using this technology in the first place. If it is a staff health and safety issue, or you're looking at safe place of work to protect yourself from attacks and harassment and injury and look after their physical and mental well-being, well, there is a great deal that you will already have to do and be doing. And then you should probably look at what additionality does the use of this technology bring, because it may make it easier, more auditable, cheaper, more reliable, more scalable, I don't know, in addition to bringing perhaps peculiar additional risks that wouldn't, say, be there if you were currently carrying out that duty through using other technology or means. If you're looking at protecting private space because you own it and manage it, irrespective of whether the public are using it, it may be that your ordinary laws and remedies and powers and principles for trespass, for example, when it comes to denying people entry or removing them if they breach the implied terms of their license to enter your premises, is exactly the same. You're simply using a technological extension of your ability to either meet your current duties or to enforce existing remedies. Where there will be very specific differences and additional considerations if you're working in a commercial or private environment is if you are seen to be or purport to be doing the police's job for them.
Well, that takes me on to a question about these public-private sector partnerships. There is currently sharing of watch lists between the police and private sector companies. What should companies be aware of in circumstances where they are receiving watch lists from the police to use in their own facial recognition systems?
The only way that the police can carry out most of their activities that rely on sophisticated technology is in a public-private partnership. The technology itself and the know-how and the software is almost certainly in private ownership. In fact, when Tom Windsor left as the HM Inspector of Constabulary, he had prophesied that the police needed much more mature partnership arrangements with the private sector, generally founded on mutual trust and confidence. And I think nowhere is that stronger than in this area of trusted surveillance and the use of intrusive and remote biometric technology. But I think in this particular area, I would go back to the point about companies need to be very aware whether they are carrying out policing or law enforcement activity, either in concert with their contracted partner, or even as an agent of the police or the state. I mean, the law enforcement directive, when we go back to GDPR, is very specific about intrusive surveillance and the processing of special personal data. One of the interesting developments that we have in this area is where the police now get their images and recordings from in general. So we've moved away from a situation that I grew up in where the state needed images of the citizen to one where increasingly it needs images from the citizen and from businesses. And one of the things that happens almost routinely now in any jurisdiction with which I've worked, after something happens that the police are interested in, is there is a public request for images, recordings, anything that people may have captured from their doorbells, dash cams, GoPros, anywhere else. And that will produce a number of additional considerations generally for the citizen and from businesses. If you are doing it expressly on behalf of or with the intention of sharing the images to assist in an investigation of crime, businesses will need to understand the additional rules around that. And there's also another point here about our framework for regulating all this. In my view, there's no point regulating only the systems that the police use if increasingly they are relying on images and data that businesses and individuals may have used to capture it. And the surveillance relationship with the citizen and with businesses is changing, and it's changing fast. So they would do well to look at that very carefully. What you wouldn't want to do is inadvertently be carrying out an activity whereby it could be reasonably seen and maybe even challenged as an agency arrangement where you were acting as an extension of the police.
Yes, I guess there's a difference, isn't there, between an incident has happened and you're helping the police to investigate that incident, to you are looking out for somebody who could be committing a crime in the future or the police are interested in. There's a difference in those two scenarios for the private sector.
The latter being... Also, there is if there's any element of direction from the police. So let's say you have somebody who contacts the police control room and says, look, I'm making this recording at the moment. There is a robbery in progress and people are getting injured. If there is any point whereby the police then direct the individual to record it in a certain way or to do something with the images, then I think you're into difficult territory there, because there is that is essentially the police using your capability through a kind of an agency arrangement, and that certainly hasn't, to my knowledge, been tested in the courts yet.
One interesting debate is whether or not the use of live facial recognition is covert surveillance or overt surveillance, which of course has different consequences in law, particularly where the police are using the technology. Is it possible that it is in fact both, that overt to the public but covert to the person on the watch list? Because even though they know that there is surveillance, perhaps there's signs up or you know, some other sort of information that flags it, that they still don't necessarily know that they are being targeted through this watch list.
Yes, I think this is a really interesting area that is largely untested. As you say, the regulation and the legal framework governing covert and overt surveillance by the police is very different, with the former being very strictly regulated by a different Act of Parliament and the oversight of the Investigatory Powers Commissioner. And this was one of the challenges that arose with the introduction of body-worn video, for example, by policing, whereby it may be immediately apparent to the person standing in front of the device on the officer's vest that they are being recorded. And they'll probably have been told so at the time. But where there are useful images for policing purposes of people and vehicles and activities in the background, then if you haven't pixelated those images out, then there is more than one use being made of the same image capture by the police at the same time. And you can extrapolate that across all sorts of other applications, for particularly for public space surveillance. There is also the market in this area is driven by and large convenience. Smaller, quieter, cheaper, less obtrusive is generally regarded as good. In this area, whether it's for your phone or whether it's for drones or whether it's for buildings that have surveillance capability integrated into part of their infrastructure or advertising hoardings or so forth. But when it comes to policing and law enforcement, if the monitoring and surveillance is completely unobtrusive and can't be known about by even the most paranoid potential subject, then you risk moving into the area of covert surveillance, particularly inadvertent covert surveillance. And this is one of the challenges I think policing will have in the future as devices become more unobtrusive and quieter and capable of doing many more things behind the lens than just taking your photograph.
The public opinion on the use of live facial recognition technology, I mean, putting aside sort of retrospective when an incident has happened, I mean, it's difficult to gauge. There have been published surveys by institutions on the use by the police. However, there doesn't seem to be much on the public opinion of the use of facial recognition technology in the private sector. But I would imagine that one concern would be the potential for private companies to use the data they collect with further biometric analysis, say a person's age, or even just other data collected, such as a spending history, and using that in the context of advertising or profiling and selling those profiles onto other commercial entities. I mean, could a company do this, take CCTV footage or live streams of facial data and use it for profiling for commercial purposes?
There are sensitivities around that, as you say. There are risks in drifting from, or even deliberately leaping from one purpose to another, and therefore the legal issues around purpose limitation will be extremely, extremely relevant and important. Where there is some contractual arrangement involving express and informed fair consent by customers and clients, then there would be significant risks in departing from that. Although, query, how would those ever be detected? How would they then be protected and remedy sort and so forth? It's a different question. But yes, one of the things that particularly at our university we've found challenging is to understand the citizens' appetite for these things, because you will get in some areas some very polarized views from the public at large, not just in one jurisdiction, but across multiple jurisdictions, where there will be differential support for certain uses. And my question would be how you could regulate against and legislate against mission creep. Because even if that were to find majority support in a room, you know, room full of people that you were testing your marketing and policies on, that doesn't necessarily get over some of the legal hurdles where you have where you've trespassed on one area of purpose from another one. And I think this is also going to be a further challenge in the future.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because on one side, most people would support the use of this technology in serious crime, of course. And also, to an extent, you know, retailers losing a large amount of money from theft and have a duty to protect their customers as well. But where it comes to the potential for expanding scope of new technologies, and whether we end up creeping towards a society where there's preemptive action and exclusion on the basis, you know, of biometric analysis, that's where we go to territory where I think a lot of people would be very uncomfortable. And I suppose it's then a case of how do we guard against that? And does data protection do enough to guard against that? Because as we see in the Clearview case at the moment, who've succeeded against the ICO, but the ICO are appealing that decision. One of the ICO's concerns has been the future use of the database of images of UK citizens, not simply the use of it now for law enforcement purposes.
Yes, and I think that interface is going to be one of the key challenges for the future. And again, at the time of retaining, sharing, applying your data and your images and voice capture and everything else that you may have picked up lawfully and proportionately and fairly, you may not know what the subsequent uses will be. And I would say that's particularly true where it is subsequently realized that it is of investigative or prosecutorial value, because you couldn't have known at the time when you collected that. But if the police or another manifestation of the state turn up and say, we believe that you know, you also have information on here that is directly relevant to something of interest to us, then on what basis do you lawfully and properly withhold that? Are we entering into an extension of some of the areas that we experienced with accessing financial information and the requirement for specific powers or judicial authorization in advance, where the police have to come and apply for it? What do you do about deliberate deletion if you were deleting information because you felt that was the right thing to do because of your contractual undertakings with customers and clients, but you did it in advance of the police applying to come and get hold of it? So I think there are some really important and taxing challenges ahead in this area. But I also think both businesses and the police will increasingly need to consider the risks of not using available technology where to do so would be lawful and proper, as you say, in terms of protecting staff, in terms of if you look at the PubWatch scheme that has been going in the UK for decades now, that entire scheme relies on local license holders making a decision about people coming into their premises, whether it's to spike drinks or fight people or sell drugs or do other things that the licensee doesn't want them to do. And not only do they put in place measures then to stop that person coming in, but they also share their images and descriptions up and down the high street to allow other licensed premises at the same time to prevent those people coming in doing those things. So I think there's a long way yet to go in terms of understanding how much of this is simply digitizing things that we are already doing under clear legal parameters, and how much of this is technology specific and only arises because we're now talking about a uniquely intrusive capability.
And it appears that the use of you know, facial recognition, live facial recognition, and other new technologies using biometric data is being adopted and developed, and there is no turning back. Even in Europe, where previously the European Parliament called for an outright ban, we now see that a concession has been made on the use of facial recognition in the negotiations for the EU AI Act. What would you like to see done in the UK, do you think, that would, I mean, either specific to this technology, or do you think it would have to be even broader to capture other types of technologies, or of course adding to facial recognition, perhaps you add other characteristics about a person?
I don't think there's any point in solely focusing on the currently available facial recognition technology. I was interested to see that in its latest iteration of its draft legislation, the European Union countries are saying the focus will be on the capacity for harm. So it seems to be moving more towards the gravamen of any future legislation rather than being driven by technology. I think in law enforcement, new technology, whether it's DNA profiling or taser or facial recognition, seems to attract polarized responses, either fetishizing the technology or demonizing it. I think both are emotional and both are probably irrational. For example, the police only have a chance of tackling some types of offending by using technology like facial recognition technology. If you put that technology beyond the reach of the police, you put the perpetrators beyond their reach too. And I think that is now increasingly being recognized. With gait matching, voice comparison, keystroke analysis, we're moving from biometrics to what I have described as zoometrics, whereby every manifestation of individual life can be measured, compared, and put to some use. And I think our regulatory framework, if people are to have confidence in it, and it is to be of any practical effect, and those two things are plainly linked, then that needs to keep up with that reality rather than simply following the latest look what they can do now.
I mean, this, from what you describe, this is incredibly intrusive, actually, on any individual. It seems that there would need to be some very specific safeguards if the police want to, or even commercial organizations want to use this technology with confidence, and certainly with public confidence. How would that sort of manifest itself? Would it be changes to the UK GDPR? Would it be, I mean, as you say, that there are changes being made in the bill. What specific things would you envisage would ameliorate the problems?
I think there are a number of things. I think there are some things in terms of accountability and governance which are already in place, and the manifestation of new surveillance technology would simply engage with those things. We saw that in Bridges that you referred to at the start of the interview, with the public sector equality duty. So some of those things are already in place and are overarching and ought not to be problematic for adapting in the light of new surveillance technology and digital processing capability. There are others that are very specifically around this area, and I think perhaps some of the framework for data protection and processing of very special sensitive data should be reviewed. There are some areas that aren't covered by data protection at all, such as capturing the samples from suspects' hair or cheek swabs or so forth, which the police do very regularly. I mean, the capturing and retaining of that material, if you like, is nothing to do with the data protection regime, and yet it is plainly extremely important in terms of individual human rights and privacy implications for the future. And every day we'll probably be able to find out more from just that small test and what it can tell us about the individual. So I think what we probably need is to understand which of these areas are very specific and technologically unique, and which of them need a refresh of the current generic arrangements in place.
That has been a very interesting discussion on a topic that is of particular importance in the times that we live in. Thank you, Fraser.
My pleasure. Thank you.